You're tuned in to Positively Terrible. I'm producer Dan, and each week my buddy Scott and I discuss surviving and thriving after trauma. It's a journey that started when Scott, his wife's fiance, and her boyfriend all walked into a bar. This week's decent human being is Melanie. She's got a fucked up story about relationships. Settle in, my terrible listeners. Today's episode is going to be positively terrible. Hey, Scott.
Producer Dan, what's going on, man?
Oh, well, I just let my dog out, and he really enjoys the sunshine. So I just chased my dog and tried to get him back inside, and it took me about 5 minutes, and that's why we're starting late. He's back there.
I definitely thought you were going to say he really enjoys the podcast. And
no.
I was going to say, ask if you had a favorite, if it was of you or me.
No, he's wildly critical about this podcast, to tell you the truth.
Okay. Well, that's understandable. I don't think he's the target demographic, but I do love that he is in the room. I did see him hop on the chair behind you.
Yeah, he's back there.
At the start of the show. But we are not here to talk about Dan's dog, although I think most of our listeners would not complain if we did talk about Dan's dog, because decent fucking humans often like dogs. It's a trait we've got in common, but fortunately we've got an even better person to talk to than Dad's dog, who won't respond to us today. We've got Melanie here. Melanie, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
Oh, doing well.
Real well.
Fantastic. I don't have many people start with fantastic. You know, we get pretty good, fine. Fantastic is a good choice of words this morning. I will assume that makes you an optimist. I don't know, but hey, you might prove me wrong over the next hour or so. But the starting point is we've got Melanie the optimist with us, and Melanie's here to talk about relationships. Melanie, you and I spoke a little bit before, and you shared a little bit with me about how relationships in your life you didn't have the best examples to learn from growing up. So do you want to start telling me about that?
Yeah, sure. It's a really long story, but
I'm sorry. I just throw out the, just tell me about that.
I will shorten it.
Okay.
So, long story short, famous quotes that always turn into really long stories, right? I grew up without my father, but I just want to throw a disclaimer out there that we are back in each other's lives. We have been for some time, and we have a really beautiful relationship.
Well, shit, we're skipping ahead. We're skipping ahead to the end now.
All right, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
Ta-da! No. So, in the midst of that, I had 6 stepdads by the time I was 21. And to say that I didn't trust men or the masculine would be a gross understatement, right? Growing up, I didn't really realize that. That didn't set in that, you know, I understood that after I started working on me. I had an emotionally unavailable mom. And, you know, you said Melanie, like the optimist. I truly always felt like I had this like inner light, if that makes sense. Like the neighborhood community that I grew up in when I was little, everybody called me Sunshine. And so,
you know, I'm not surprised.
So despite, you know, what my reality was, you know, I always felt just like an inner light, an inner glow. It's more of a positive outlook, if you will, which I clearly needed to have, right?
Right. When you were, like, your earliest memories, did you have a father or father figure in your life at that point?
So I don't have childhood memory of my father. I've seen pictures and things like that, but I've been told around 2 or 3 is when, you know, I didn't see him anymore. Actually, I haven't talked about him in a long time. But anyway, he came in around 5. So what had happened? Okay, let's do a little fast forward and then we can do a rewind. Okay, okay. To like keep everybody like on par here.
I love the nonlinear storytelling. It's my favorite.
Yeah. So, I mean, life isn't linear, right? You're like, do, 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 do. So I was on my second marriage. Okay. First marriage had three kids with, super toxic. You could say, you know, fucking psycho. Okay. You could say that. 10 years older than me. All the red flags were there. In fact, you know, they look like freaking flare guns. Just go, don't do it. Don't do it. And of course, you know, I'm the kind of person that likes to learn shit the hard way, apparently. So I didn't listen. So, but I had three really beautiful, wonderful children. And on the second marriage, okay, two marriages, two divorces. The second marriage, epiphany of that, oh my God, you're getting divorced again? Like, what is wrong with you? This was like the question that I asked myself. So I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you that you keep choosing and marrying these toxic men? And it wasn't a self-loathing, you know how we can get into that like darkness. It was an epiphany. It was this awareness. It was like, holy shit, it's you. And not like it's you, the blame game, but you're the common denominator, right? So like, I think in today's society, we're so into blaming everybody else, but like self-accountability is critical to create actual change, right? And so that's what I felt in that moment. It was like, yeah, I can say one was a narcissist and an asshole, and one was, you know, codependent and toxic. They were both technically toxic, right? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but who chose them? You did. You chose them. So what part of you is okay with having men like that in your life, right? Like what part of you? And so I truly felt broken. I really, really did. And so that was a really beautiful journey of self-exploration at its like most simplistic form, the way that I could put it.
Yeah. And I can't wait to hear more about that, but I'm going to pull you back again. Let's go back to stepdad one.
Okay.
Well, we don't have to. You look hesitant, but I kind of want to go through
that. I had to get the picture in my head.
Okay. Let's just kind of go through the journey of the stepdads. What age did you say it was when stepdad one came in your life?
Five.
And you said that, well, I think you said he's a good man.
Yes.
Does that mean that, well, what was it like for having a stepdad? Was he a good father figure for you then?
Yeah, he was. You know, the wonderful thing of that upbringing was that I was fortunate enough to have good humans. Like it could have gone really, really bad, right? Sexual abuse, any kind of like sinister type things that happen a lot of times in those situations. I had one really awful stepdad in the bunch.
Okay. So,
but yeah, when he'd come over, I used to tell my mom that the weirdo's here. But he really wasn't a weirdo. He was very philosophical and he just wanted to talk me to death. Okay. And I'm like, just ground me or something. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. So at 5 years old, you weren't looking to get into ancient philosophy, philosophical.
Discussion. Yeah. Exactly.
And you said that most of your stepdads were good guys. And honestly, that was kind of a surprise to hear. Because a lot of times when there are many men, it's toxic relationship after toxic relationship. What was going on that you ended up with so many? I mean, six is a kind of, I'm just going to say, ridiculous number in my mind.
It's a lot.
Yeah. What happened that you were going through so many stepdads?
Well, what I came to understand as I got older was that my mom didn't truly believe she could take care of herself financially. And so she wasn't an incurable romantic. She literally thought she needed a man to take care of her. Like she could not. Like she could, but she didn't believe that. And so, yeah, she went from man to man in order to be able to be taken care of. But the thing that was crazy is like, none of them were rich. So, I'm just saying, do it.
Were these men, were they like official stepdads? And by that, I mean, did your mom, were they her husbands or were they just long-term relationships?
No, they were all her husbands except for that first one that I was talking about.
Okay. And at five, you have your first stepdad. What is the timeline then for, I mean, is the next one at six? Is it at eight? What are kind of the timeline for all the stepdads?
No, the first couple were for a long time. And then like towards the end, as I got older, there were multiple until I was 12. He was with me for a while.
The first one was?
Yep. And then the one that was terrible was from 13 to 18. So like very formidable years for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is not that there's a good time to have a bad stepdad, but I can only imagine that at this point you're already struggling to be a teenager. At least most people are. Yours might have been the best teenage years ever. I don't know.
No.
But to have any new man step into your life at 13 years as a stepfather sounds like a challenge. And to have one that you're calling the bad one sounds incredibly difficult. Did your relationship with your stepdad can you just describe it a little bit for us?
Yeah, I just felt this is very alone. I just felt very alone. My mom married him because she got pregnant. So here I'm 13 and I have a little brother on the way. Mm-hmm. And it's just been me, right? The best way to describe it, like I look back and I see like pictures of myself and I just look so sad. And I felt very alone. I didn't feel like that was my family. I felt like the outsider. And he was just really mean from the beginning, very like emotionally abusive. Like there was nothing that I could do that was good enough or right enough. And my mom never stood up for me. And those years were the years that I started to resent my mom a lot. Like before that, I didn't really see her. Do you know what I mean? Like as we get older, the reality sets in of like, you know, who people truly are. And, you know, it's not a matter of judgment, but it is, you know, acceptance. And yeah, like anytime he was awful to me, I would say things to her and she wouldn't ever do a single thing. I'll give you a couple incidences that will kind of just paint the picture of what that life was for those 5-6 years.
Yeah, please do.
So, I was washing dishes. So he was in the military. He's a very big man. I'm only like 5'3", 5'4". He's like 6'2", 200 something pounds. And he's like over here, like hovering over me. To this day, I don't even like anybody around when I'm cleaning because I couldn't freaking stand that shit. And so he's like hovering over and, you know, telling me all the ways I suck at like what I'm doing, right? Like washing. And I'm washing all these utensils, even though we had a dishwasher. At this point, I'm 16, okay? I don't know if you know anything about 16-year-old girls, but we start to get a little snappy, a little bit of an attitude to develop around that age, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So just paint the picture. So I'm rinsing them off, and there's a lot. Like handfuls of, I don't know, I don't remember why I was washing so many utensils, but I'm putting him over in the bin, right? And he's standing over me and he's like, you know, I'm obviously not going to do justice, like his tone, but his tone was very, let's just say asshole matter of fact. And he's like, those aren't done, like rewash them, right? And I'm like, looking at him like, are you crazy? They're clean. No, they're not, right? And so we're like arguing back and forth. He reaches over me and he like goes in and he like goes to grab all the utensils, right? And he's like this, and he goes to throw them down back in the sink. And as he does that, I look down. I can still see the scar in my hand. I look down and there's a fucking steak knife in my hand.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, what the fuck? Right? Like in shock of like what I'm actually looking at.
Okay.
And I look down, like in just again, shock. And I look up at him. He's like right here. And I'm like, you're psycho. I'm telling mom. And he just looked at me with like not an ounce of just nothing there, right? And said, you deserved it. And walked.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So that was 13 to 18 kind of shit. And when I told my mom, she didn't do anything about it.
That's terrible. I was going to ask if you thought it was maybe just a military type motivation that he was trying to give, or if it was him being an asshole. But by the time a knife
fake knife through the hand goes asshole.
Yeah.
I think it's even beyond the word asshole.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So you were, he was in your life until you were 18, you said?
Yes.
Did you have to continue to interact that way, or were you able to like, get out of the house, or, you know, what happened?
So I didn't, there was nobody in my life besides my mom, right? My dad wasn't there. My mom's family, they lived all over the country. I absolutely adored my grandmother, her mother, but she lived in Tennessee, like in like literally some like, I'm sorry, hobunk town. Like, no, that's not an option.
I get it.
Not an option. So I was kind of stuck. I did have a best friend who I spent a lot of time at her house, but the stepdad made me stay home a lot because now I got two little brothers I got to take care of too. So I got to clean the house. I got to take care of my two little brothers and basically be their mom. And so like my teenage life sucked. And it's not, listen, let's just paint a real picture here. Okay. It's not this new generation of entitled kids. No, like it was like slave labor is what it felt like. Okay. Like there's a difference between watching your siblings for your parents. They can go out occasionally and they appreciate you and you love your siblings and you're like, yeah, of course I'll do it. Right. And then there's another level of like, no, this is your responsibility, Melanie, even though these are not your children and this was not your choice. You're going to take care of them and you're going to do all these things. Right. So yeah, it sucked. I'll paint one more picture for you.
Okay.
And you see, I'm smiling because I've clearly I've done work on this, right? Clearly. At the time, big hair was really in. Okay. It's that teasing the hell out of your hair, right?
I remember those days for sure.
So it was a house that was three bedrooms, one bathroom. So I would get up in the morning, take a shower, and then get out of the bathroom in case anybody needed it, right? And I would get ready in my room. And okay, for girls, this is like a 1.5 hour process, okay? Blow dry, curl, tease, spray, tease some more, spray, right? All the things. So all my setup was in my bedroom. And one day, he gets pissed off at me. I paint this picture for a reason. You'll understand in a second. One day he gets pissed off at me. I don't remember why. Probably something stupid. And takes my door off the hinges. Okay. This is a 16-year-old girl again here. Okay.
Right.
Privacy for a 16-year-old young woman. Big damn deal. Right. Takes the door off my hinges. Grabs my mirror. Takes it out in the backyard and smashes it into pieces. And tells me I look at myself in the mirror.
Jesus, unnecessary, first of all, but Jesus, I mean,
psycho.
This is abuse. This is, you know, some people, when you don't have a hand laid on you or things like that, sometimes people have a hard time recognizing it. I'm glad you said yes, though, because this is abuse.
Emotional abuse can sometimes leave a longer mark for a longer period of time because nobody else sees it.
Well, and I've also heard people say bruises heal, broken bones heal. And it's even with the physical abuse, it's the mental stuff that stays with you. Yeah. And it is hard getting other people to understand when there aren't bruises or broken bones involved. Well, so he broke your mirror. Was that kind of a theme of his? Did he break other things of yours, or have what I would call violent actions that weren't necessarily violent to your physical person, but breaking your things or other tactics like that that were harmful to you?
Those were like the two major memories that I can recall. Mm-hmm. How he was on a typical day was, no matter what you did, whether it was a chore, a homework, an assignment, a project, it was never good enough.
Yeah.
It was like, if you came home with A's and B's, it's like, why the fuck did you get any B's? Right?
Did you realize that it was fucked up at the time?
I hated my life during that time. And I started to hate my mother too. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know your mom, but I can understand why, especially at that age, that's the feeling that you would start to feel.
Yeah.
Did you tell friends that it was like this?
Only my best friend. I did not trust anybody. First of all, like, when you're a teenager, like, that shit's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, it's embarrassing. It's humiliating. And even though, like, you know, logically it's not your fault, but it's your life and your situation. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was embarrassed to have a mom that would do that. I was embarrassed for myself. I carried a lot of shame around it. And there was nobody that I didn't want anybody to know I was living like this. I did not want anybody to feel sorry for me. I didn't want anybody talking about me. Like, you know, when you're like that age, like, you just want to blend. You just want to blend in, and you want to paint the picture like everything is wonderful and perfect, like everybody else's life.
Well, when you talk about Aquanet, I can't help but think that those discussions are about your favorite New Kid on the Block member.
Yeah, like boy bands and crap like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the way that you're normal. And remind me later, I do want to see pictures of this big hair. I hope you've got some pictures that you're willing to share of the
boy. I don't even know where they are anymore. My hair is huge. Like, I wouldn't even fit in the screen, okay?
All right, okay. So let's move forward a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
This is absolutely traumatic. Aside from that, your mom's husbands, you said, were pretty decent guys, but clearly you're the example that she gave you for being in relationships might not have been the healthiest. And at least I'm making an assumption that might have been the start of your experience with your own relationships.
Yeah, of course.
So when did you have your first, like, boyfriend?
When I was 16.
Okay. And was that your typical high school teenage romance?
Yeah, he was 3 years older than me.
Okay. Which is...
Back then is a big deal.
It's pushing it a little bit, but also it's not like you're 16 and he's 24, which really pushing it.
Yes.
So was that relationship as healthy as a teenage relationship could be, or did you start to seeing the problems at that age?
No, he was really sweet and he was really good to me.
Okay.
He came from a Middle Eastern background. So his family was very, very strict and we weren't even allowed to sit next to each other on the couch.
Okay. Wow. All right. Which might be an okay starting point for your first relationship at 16, although I would have been happy with that.
Yeah.
And let's talk about a little bit of your history from there then. When did you start seeing that you were in relationships that were, you know, toxic?
My first would be my first husband. So I met him when I was 21 and he was 31. Mm-hmm. And it took me a year to actually go on a date with him, which I'm just going to say, like, to anybody listening, that's red flag right there.
Well,
I'm going to point out all the red flags for you.
Okay, let me clarify this.
Yeah.
a year into a relationship, or it was a year before you were willing to like accept a an offer for a date?
Yes, exactly. I knew him for a year.
Okay.
And I was not even remotely interested in going out with him.
Okay. What changed?
Well, what changed was I didn't know this at the time. Okay. But obviously self-reflection, I did. I didn't trust love. Mm-hmm. I did not trust love at all. And so I didn't. I got into a relationship with him and I married him knowing that I didn't truly love him. Like, could say I loved him, but you know how people talk about like being in love madly, deeply, like I would die for you. The sun rises and sets in your eyes, like true love, soulmate love. No, not close.
Was that kind of the embodiment of what you saw from your mom of needing to have a husband?
What I felt I needed, and again, I didn't know this at the time. It was very unconscious, but now that I've done so much work to understand myself, what I felt I needed and what I wanted was peace, some lack of chaos, because my whole upbringing felt like chaos, and it felt like just survival. And so I just wanted to know that I could count on somebody who would be there for me and I could stay in one fucking spot for a minute.
Yeah.
And he was an Italian guy and he came from what I thought was a nice close family. And that's what I always wanted and what I didn't feel I ever had. And so I was attracted to that too. You know, that closer bond. Not coming from a broken home, that whole terminology is fucked up anyway.
For sure.
Only perpetuates a cycle of you already feeling broken, right? So, yeah. So, and he painted the picture of, I'll always be here for you. You can count on me. And I didn't realize it because I was so young. He was starting to like alienate and isolate me and pull me away from my family, my friends, and consistently painted this picture of I'm the only one who you can ever count on. I'm the only one who's ever been there for you. I'm the only one. And your mom's a piece of shit and that person's a piece of shit and your best friend's a piece of shit. Everybody's a piece of shit but me, right? So like this savior type of complex. But what he was really doing was getting ready to, mind fuck me, into some form of mind control and submission.
Yeah.
And I was very naive. And from 20, so we dated 5 years before we got married. And we broke up multiple times within that space. Like I saw I don't even know what words, like... Here's a crazy thing, okay? When you've lacked healthy attention in your life, any attention will feel like it's love. And so he pursued me way more than any man ever did. He went like way out of his way. As I reflect back, and as I reflected back, you know, 6 years ago when I started my healing journey, I was like, he was psycho. That wasn't attention. That was psychotic behavior, stalker behavior that you, because you didn't have any examples of what healthy attention looked like, you were like, oh man, he must really be into me. He must really love me.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
And these are all common behaviors in toxic relationships, right? Yes. I sometimes say I feel like there's a fucking playbook out there somewhere that gets passed around by abusers to say, hey, have you tried this yet? Because it fucking works.
Yes. Yeah.
And I do want to say, I want to go back just a moment and say you didn't necessarily have the healthy model of love and relationships, but we all have values, right? And it sounds like there is a point in your time where things like safety and order were what you were seeking.
Safety, and, order, peace.
Yeah.
Calm.
Yeah. And I will even say that from my perspective, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a relationship expert, but I don't think there's anything wrong of valuing some of that stuff over the deep romantic love or something like that. I think that they're just different types of love and different types of things you need in your life.
Yeah.
So the problem isn't necessarily what you went after. It's that he was a piece of shit.
He was anything but those things.
Exactly. Yeah. But he knew how to disguise himself.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, again, from the abuser's playbook. At what point did you start understanding that the attention... Well, you know, let me not say the attention, but at what point did you start understanding that the relationship was not going well?
I mean, I knew it all along. I just lied to myself. I think that's the biggest disservice we do, is we just constantly lie to ourselves. Like, I would tell myself things like, it will get better. It will be better. He'll change because me, he's never been with anybody like me. Like, I'm good. I'm a good person. Right. And again, because I didn't trust love, true love, I knew that if it didn't work out, I'd be okay. It wouldn't break me. I wouldn't fall apart. I would be the one that could walk away and be like, I'm good.
So at what point did you decide it was time to, well, I guess I'm making an assumption that you're the one that walked away. Okay. So at what point did you decide that it was time to walk away?
So 9 years into the relationship, we've had 3 children. And the whole relationship was examples of extreme toxic behavior from every part, not just him, his mother, how she talked to me. I wasn't ever a good enough mother. I didn't do anything right enough. I had 0 boundaries. I didn't even know what a boundary was. Boundary? Like, people could talk to me how they wanted. They could treat me how they wanted. I was a people pleaser. I found myself like making myself a chameleon, morphing myself into whatever anybody wanted me to be or needed me to be so that they wouldn't leave, right? So like these abandonment wounds are like playing out in my life that I wasn't consciously aware of. And so there was constant fights. There was constant him choosing everybody else over me and my kids. And I had realized, you know, again, another side of this, doing all this work, that that's all I ever wanted. All I ever wanted was to be important for somebody. And I'd never felt it. And so I thought, well, if I'm your wife, I'm supposed to be your number one. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure I'm your wife. I'm your chosen family. And my children, our children, were supposed to be your number one, but we weren't. His immediate family was his number one, his mother, his brother, his sisters. And so we would fight about that. And so there's all these indications, right? But again, you got to understand that one of my core beliefs that really was ingrained in me is that if I got divorced, that means I'm my mother. And my mother to me was my role model of who not to be. I don't want to be that. I know how much pain that inflicted on me as a child, all those marriages, right? I would die before I would do that to my children, right? So that was so ingrained in my nervous system. So when I took those vows, like, those vows are forever. Divorce is not an option. Nope. Not fucking happening, right? So even though I knew it wasn't healthy, I have 3 babies with this man. I can't break this family up. Again, I can't be my mother. I can't have my children come from, you know, what society calls a broken home, even though it was already broken inside.
Well, we do a lot of things for reasons that are not the right reasons. There's no, wait, we talk about the handbook. I say the abuser's handbook, but where's the handbook for the rest of us? I know people are out there trying and actually writing a lot of them. It's like nobody teaches you how to, I shouldn't say nobody, but I think there should be a lot more help when you're younger at learning how to be in healthy relationships. And I'm going to say something that what you just said really kind of hit me, and I can't believe I'm going to admit this on this show. Sorry to like my mom. This isn't anything that I did, but this is embarrassing. It's extremely embarrassing. Is that when you say you just wanted to be important? I've said that the biggest thing I want in relationships moving forward is to be considered. Mm-hmm. I had a literal list in this. I can't believe I'm admitting this, and I don't know why. I apologize.
Yes, this is a real exclusive.
No, I think I'm going to let you down, Dan, because this isn't funny or deep or anything, but I had a fucking list of things that I considered more important than me to my wife. Mm. I had a fucking list that I was not in the top five of. And when I apologize and say I'm embarrassed, I didn't know I was in a bad marriage.
Yeah.
But I still had a list of things and people who were more important than me, including our cats. So how did you get over the idea that you'd be your mom if you left?
Yeah, great question. So he woke me up. Okay, how the divorce started. Okay, after 9 years, we'd been fighting like crazy. He woke me up in the middle of the night, because that's kind of fucked up shit that he would do occasionally, because remember, he's the mind fuck, mess with you. At like 1 a.m, and he wants to have a conversation about our marriage and says, we should get separated. And I said, are you crazy? Like, we have 3 kids. That's not an option. And at that time, they were 2, 4, and 6. They were babies, okay? So, no, we'll get counseling. And one of his, like, really close friends was having issues in his marriage. So he was, you know, very aware of it. And he was going to marriage counseling with his wife, right? And so I'm like, we'll go to counseling. And his exact words, you guys, counseling's for pussy. And for those years, Melanie, my voice was very often silenced because I got punished when I spoke up. I got the silent treatment for days until I came and apologized. So there was a repetition of that mental abuse from the stepdad, right? But at a whole other level, okay? At like a cult type level. But just us. And so Melanie started to come back out again, and her voice, her throat chakra started to open up again when he said, because she's been silenced, right? So when he said, counseling's for pussies, I said, well, you'd probably get a whole lot more pussy if you actually went to counseling.
Right? That's a pretty good answer. I think more men should be aware of that fact.
All right. Yes. I think you are a very persuasive woman, Melanie. That's a good argument. And his response.
I mean, call me crazy, but.
And his response to that was what?
Oh, he was pissed. He was so angry. How dare I speak to him that way? Don't you know who you're talking to? So he like stormed off angry. It was my first awakening, you could call it that. Because when I woke up the next morning, I woke up. All these light bulbs started to go off. And I was like, what am I even fighting for? This isn't even actually a marriage. In the definition of a healthy marriage, this is not it, right? I don't even like him as a human. Like so many things started to come up. I'm sorry to say, for myself, I had to force myself to have sex with him. Like, it was like obligatory sex. So this is my wife. I'm the wife, therefore, this is my duty. I yuck, like all across the board. As a human, he had a dark soul. And I was finally starting to see it. And so when he did that, that was a bad move on his part. And I know he did it as like psychological warfare.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, I don't even want to be with you anymore. Like, this is no, right? And so when you said, like, what made you decide to break that, I'll even call it a generational curse of, like, staying together for the kids kind of shit. I thought to myself, okay, I could stay, right? And I won't be my mom. Ridiculous when you think about it. And the thoughts that were going on, okay? Like two very different thoughts. One, you stay, right? Because now you're not a bad person. You don't come from a broken home. You're not some piece of shit because you divorced your husband. How dare you, right? You're not a good woman anymore if you do that. You may as well just walk around with a scarlet letter or something, right? Because society is going to judge the shit out of you, right?
Yeah.
So that is what kept me there for a while. Or the thought that helped me leave was, if I stay in this marriage, I am showing my daughter that this is how a man should treat her. Fuck that. Right? And then I am showing my boys that this is how they treat a woman. No fucking way. And for me, it was like, literally, I'm getting tingles as I'm saying this. For me, it was like, this ends with me. This ends with me. I am showing them a better way, a healthier way.
Yeah. And Melanie, you said you're getting, I was over here. I don't know if you could see my arms, but I kind of lifted them because we hit the goosebump moment. I love the goosebump moment.
I love it. Yes.
And I know that your journey continues. Well, it'll continue for the rest of your life. But this is a great segue into the happy stuff.
Yeah.
So, Melanie, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's just say, what are you up to today? What's going on in your life today?
Yeah. So in that healing journey that started over 6 years ago, I didn't know who I was at all. As a woman, as a mind, as a body, as a soul, as a contributor to society, who the hell is Melanie anyway? And so that, it was like a journey of self-discovery. And I swore to myself that whomever I am, whoever she turns out to be, I'm going to be her in the most authentic, unapologetic way, no matter what. No matter if somebody likes it or if they don't. I'm not pizza. Not everybody's going to fucking like me. And right. I'm okay with that, right? Because I knew I was coming from this beautiful place, this place of wholeness, of truth of who am I, right? We're not all here to fit in. And so in that journey of like self-discovery and understanding, it was like a journey of unlearning, unbecoming, right? Just peeling off all the layers, all the boxes that society wants to put us into, you know, this is good and this is bad and this is right and this is wrong and blah, 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 blah. It's crap, right? So you're like exploding all these boxes that you unconsciously took on. You didn't even know. And within that self-exploration, healing, unlearning, unbecoming, and then becoming who I really am, becoming a coach found me. I didn't actually go out seeking to be a love and relationship coach. It came as a unwavering, unshakable knowing from inside that this is why you're here. This is why you went through that shit storm of a past. It was not for nothing. Right. It was so you can show others the way, others like you, the way. There is a better way. There is a different way. It doesn't have to be that way. And so that just came as this such a truth. Just that, like, every cell in my body was like, yes, this is it.
Okay, so I'm having a little bit of trouble. Not trouble. That's the wrong word, but you said coaching found you.
Yes.
how did you get to this point where you were open to having coaching find you? Were you actively working on yourself already?
Yes. I was working on myself like it was my damn job, Scott. Okay. My job, my obsessive, in the most healthy way, 24/7. Like if you name it, I've probably done it. I did combo. I did ayahuasca. I did retreats. I did seminars. I worked with coaches. I went to therapy. I did chakra healing. I worked with shamans. Like, you fucking name it, I've done it. So in that, right, I just kept listening to my inner wisdom, my intuition. Ooh, this sounds good. Let's try that. Ooh, that sounds good. Let's try that. And as my life started dramatically change, as I started to feel just this unwavering inner peace, which I had never had that in my entire life. Like, I felt like this all the time, just like, ooh, like everything in knots. I just felt like just so much expansion, openness, just surrendering to like the beauty and the wonder and the mystery of life, and no longer thinking I was a fucking victim in this world. Like, forgiveness came for myself, especially. I had such a hard time forgiving myself, but forgiveness for the stepdads, forgiveness for my mother, forgiveness for my father, forgiveness for me.
Yeah.
And all these layers just started to just melt away. And I understood like the truth of our humanity and our divinity, and, you know, our light and our dark. Sense, right?
Yeah. And you say all that forgiveness. I mean, I think me sitting here and fucking apologizing to my mom for the shame that I felt over something in my relationship just says how hard it is to forgive yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Even when the other people aren't judging you the way you think you are. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I want to comment on is, since I've started my journey, I clearly have some work to continue to do, but, you know, you just named a list of things and said the lightness and the dark. And what I'm going to sit here and say is, there's a lot of what I call hippie shit that I never believed in before. I've been way more open to a lot of things exist for a reason. Yeah. And not everything works for everyone. Mm-hmm. We don't all get to the same place in the same ways. But I've learned that there's a foundation for most of this stuff that isn't just some guy in his fucking basement decided, hey, I'm going to try this. And I love the openness for your journey, saying you tried, if you've named it, you tried it. And that's awesome. And I think that that's a wonderful way to find what works for you. So now you are a coach. Where can people find you, and what's your coaching like?
So, Mike, in essence, okay, the majority of people who work with me, I work with men and women, and the majority of people who find me is because they have seen some variation of who I used to be in who they currently are. Mm-hmm. And so many of them have struggled with toxic relationships, and they get to a point where they're just over it, right? And so it's this beautiful, it's really hard to put this in words. This word ineffable keeps coming to me all the time. It's like there are no words, but it's this journey into self that I take them into. And what I realized in my own journey, in my own healing, and what I see time and time again in all of my clients, right, 99.9% of them, the reason we have shitty toxic relationships in our life is because we have a shitty toxic relationship with ourselves. And so what I do in my coaching is I get to the root cause of that. Why do you have a shitty toxic relationship with yourself, right? And there's work within the mind, and there's work within the body. And when they're done, their whole life has shifted. It's not just relationships, right? So I've had clients find their soulmates. I've had clients repair relationships with their family where the bonds were broken. I've had clients start to have like an unwavering, unshakable love for self, where at one point they hated themselves. And everything just starts to shift. Like their life shifts. You can't just go into like the human psyche, if you will, and start just extracting like, why didn't the relationships work, mm-hmm. without impacting your whole life? Because if something that impacted and affected your ability to have a healthy relationship is your truth right now, then it's showing up in your work life. It's showing up in, yes. your body in, yes. some way, shape, or form, right? It's showing up in every aspect of your life. You just don't see it yet.
Yeah. And Melanie, I'm going to say something that I find with myself, and it's an unfortunate thing, I guess, is that when I am at my worst mentally is when I want to be in a relationship the most. It's kind of one of those things where I think I'm looking for external validation, or I'm looking for someone who can just fucking help me be a human.
Yeah.
But I'm not in a place to be in a healthy relationship during those times. And when I'm at my best, that's the Scott that I want to be able to give to someone.
Yeah.
But it's also when it's less important, because I'm fucking happy with me. And a relationship would just be the icing on the fucking cake. And I can only imagine the day that I'm there when I've got a relationship that's healthy and I am healthy internally as a human. And it sounds like that's where you want to help people get to. So, Melanie, yep. we are running very short on time because I've got to go coach a bunch of little 8-year-olds at baseball practice.
Cute.
What I didn't hear yet was, where can people find you?
Yeah. So the name of my company is called The Wild Heart Life, because I believe we're all wild hearts at our soul.
Okay. Good name.
Yeah.
Thank you. And so you can find you, if you just look for that, Google that, you'll see all kinds of things. You can find me on Instagram as I am Melanie Ristretti. You can find me on Facebook as Melanie Ristretti.
Yep. And we will share all of those on the website, on the show notes, on our social media as well. So we will let people find you. But Melanie, this has been great. You're wonderful. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm grateful and humbled, and I'm just so thankful that you're willing to come and share your story with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been my honor.
Yeah, of course. And listeners, remember you can follow us on our social media as well, at positivelyterrible.com. You can send us an email at podcast@positivelyterrible.com. And I'll say it as I say every week. You can tell us the story that you want to tell us, but you can also talk to us about the decent fucking human tattoo. Because Melanie, I think we need to make ourselves known with if you're a decent fucking human, you should get the decent fucking human tattoo.
No, you should not.
I am definitely not tattooing any part of my body.
Oh, I was definitely saying that to our listeners. If they want a tattoo, contact me. I'm still willing to pay. I've got people who have said they want a tattoo and have not gotten one yet.
I was nervous and stressed because I thought you were the best, I was right.
Positively Terrible is a part of the Terrible Podcast Network.